regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Good night to all our dear listeners. You are tuned in to Iran Radio broadcast from Tehran. Very nice to have you with us. I'm hosting you for the next hour. Stay with us into the early hours of this morning. We'll start this hour's lineup with Youth Station. The program is all about young people and addresses topics which are all related to young people. Our varied radio productions feature will follow. And after that, it's time for Minbar. The program covers speeches on a host of subjects by very well-known Islamic scholars and orators. Stay with us for the next hour.
Start. Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
Islam, my deen.
Allah, my Lord.
His word, Quran.
Muhammad, Prophet.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to all of you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of Youth Station. This is Nahid, having the honor of being with you, and here with me, I have the pleasure of being with my very dear sister.
Masuma, how are you?
Great. How about you?
Everything is nice.
When was the last time that you traveled?
It was this summer.
And are you a travel person, travel-y person?
Yes, I just love it. You know how travel brings you little and big inconvenient problems? And
really?
I love solving them. For example, little inconveniences are food or shower.
Do you care about them?
They're nice to solve.
The problems?
Them. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Because these problems are not that crazy hard. Because we're living in 21st century, so travel is not that hard of a thing. But it has some inconveniences. When I try to solve them, I feel powerful. I feel like, wow, I did it. I survived.
Interesting.
I love this good feeling. On the other side, my mom, she hates it. She's like, why?
So do I.
Yes, so she does not like travel as much as I do. Or maybe she did back then, but now she doesn't because, you know, age changes stuff. But yeah, I really, really love travel, especially if it has small, teeny, tiny problems to solve.
Wow, interesting. I don't like traveling a lot.
Really?
Yeah, because of my own reasons, you know, I should have everything prepared. I mean, I'm not the kind of person who would love challenges on a trip. Probably because of my own lifestyle. I mean, I'm already busy. I'm doing lots of things every day. So once I go on a trip, I want it to be just relaxing and soothing and without any problems. I want it to comfort me, not to make me stop and then think, okay, how am I going to face the challenge of finding a good hotel? So this bothers me. Imagine when we go on a trip. 2 or 3 days before, I have to reserve the hotel. I have to make sure that the hotel is acceptable regarding my own criteria. And if everything is okay, I will go for it. But if, for example, I see one comment that is saying there once was found a lizard in that hotel, that's going to be canceled.
No, I'm not that picky. I let it be a little bit easier because for some travels, some journeys are not that easy, but you have to go through them.
And life itself
is
that journey.
Life is the big metaphor for journey.
See, this can be one of my own reasons. Like, we're living a life which is going to be a hard travel. Why should I go on the other travels which will be challenging for me?
A travel in bigger trouble.
Yeah. But in Islam, regarding our religion, this keyword of travel and trip has been repeatedly used. I mean, our Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alayhi wa sallam had mentioned, travel and you will be healthy and blessed. I mean, in Islam, this traveling thing has been repeated and has been highlighted.
Yes.
So this is going to be important. But why? Why is this this much important that we have to go on trips? We have to go to see different places with all its challenges.
So I think that why Islam told us to travel and the importance of it is because how it makes you a different person. Usually when we come back from a travel, we are not the same person that had left the door. We are a bit different. We have experienced something new. We have seen something new. Even if you're visiting the same city.
Right.
For example, maybe you're visiting your hometown.
Mm-hmm.
And you have visited your hometown maybe 10 times in your life. But I think still it can bring changes if you let the doors to be open to you. you can see new people. You can not meet them. I don't mean to go and meet people because that is a bit inconvenient.
Yeah.
Too inconvenient for a small journey. But just seeing people, seeing life, seeing differences, it makes you a bit different. And I love this difference. These little experiences, these little differences that make you think out of the box.
So you mean travel can be the source of gaining wisdom about different groups of people, about culture,
yes.
about the differences, even
yes.
those differences that will hurt us or will make us sad for a second.
Yes.
Like, why did it happen to me? That culture shock, let's say. But this can be a source of wisdom, a place
Indeed.
That we can start to grow.
Yes. It's what are we taking out of it and how it's going to change me. Of course, if I let these little shocks bother me and be a negative person, then it's not very nice. But if we be a bit positive toward it and try to change ourselves for the sake of improvement, it's going to be very easy. It's going to be nice.
And when we talk about travel, you know what? I was right now thinking of this word travel. To answer my own question that why is travel so important in Islam, I was thinking that maybe travel had different concepts regarding our religion. I mean,
mm-hmm.
one of them is the kind of travel that we go these days. I mean, easy peasy in a place that we like it,
yeah.
in a, I don't know, in an interesting environment. We had the kind of travel which was hard in the past.
Yes.
The travel that people had to spend days on a camel to just reach one place. They had the lack of food, lack of water,
yes.
and all these problems were on their way, and still they would have done it. Or even the thing that our prophet was mentioning at this time, that we can travel for our life for the sake of Islam.
Mm-hmm.
Remembering the story of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he went on a travel, he went on a trip that he knew it's going to be the destination.
Yes.
It's going to be the end. But still he went there. With all the difficulties that he knew from before. See, it's really scary. Like, you know that this trip that you're going on is not going to be easy. But you still choose to continue this path.
Yes,
Even
for the sake of growth and
yeah.
for the sake of God.
Yeah, so I think these examples, these samples of our role models can show that that what we mean by travel is not the kind of thing that maybe we are all imagining right now.
Yeah, it's not the perfect vacation that sometimes we think of, but travel can be very different. It can be for very harsh reasons.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
The most important kind of trip can be our own trip towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I mean,
yes.
the way we are moving on His way, the way we are imagining ourselves on a path that the perfect destination, the ultimate goal is going to be reaching Him. So we are also living on a kind of trip as well.
Yes.
We are on our path towards the greatness, towards the purpose of our life. But going back to the kind of things that we can see these days, the trips that all of us are going, our listeners might be thinking, okay, if I go on a vacation and there is no spiritual benefits for me, why should I go there? I'm a Muslim. I do have responsibilities. What are my responsibilities as a Muslim, as the character of a person who is going to travel to different places? And how can I take it to my advantage?
We have in our religion that we need to have a part of our, you know, schedule
yeah.
specified for rest, where we can let our mind be in a state of peace, far from normal chaos. And I think journey can be a very nice thing, like a short trip to somewhere, as you mentioned, free
yeah.
from chaos, free from normal, you know, schedule.
So true.
Although you might love your job and all, but you need to take a break so that when you
yeah,
come
right.
back, you're even more energetic.
That's a kind of self-discovery.
Yes, it makes you think of yourself, oh, I could be this as well.
Right, so true. And the other thing can be the spiritual journey. I mean, the way we can use our own opportunities by traveling to even different cities as the spiritual place for improvement. I mean, I can surely learn some stuff from different culture, from different groups of society. Maybe those people in another city who are doing something, I don't know, as a kind of
mm-hmm.
worship. I can do the same. Maybe they know many things that can help me improve. So they are not useless. I mean, the trips that we go to, for sure, we're going to rest and we're going to spend some time just having fun, getting a little far from the work and from everything that we do face on our daily basis. But then here, this is the place that we can learn. We can go inside, we can learn things that can help us improve, even in this spiritual way.
And another type of, you know, travel we can have is toward nature. Different places that you can see beautiful part of nature, mountains, deserts, trees, forest, whatever. And also we have in Surah Al-Ankabut, verse 20, that says, travel through the land and observe how he began creation.
Wow.
It is nice that it can be one of the advantages of traveling when you look around and have a little connection with the nature and the greater connection with the creator of this nature.
Yeah, so true. So the way we're traveling does not mean that we're going to stop worshiping, that we're going to stop everything, keep them at home, and then leave. While we're on a trip, there are many things that we can see, even things that we cannot see on our own places, in our own city. Maybe we got used to seeing the beauty of nature and we've got used to seeing the beauty of the creation of Allah. But then once we travel, our eyes are open to the new areas. And the other thing that can help us to understand the concept and the importance of traveling is traveling to break the routines. I mean, living comfort zone teaches us resilience, teaches us that not everything is going to be on the way that we planned. I don't know if you've experienced this before or not, but once it happened to me, and it taught me many lessons. Well, my brother lives in another city, and it's kind of far from us. And last year, suddenly we had to go there. I mean, he called. He had some work with my dad, and they talked. And then the decision was that we had to go there for almost like a week.
Mm-hmm.
So we went there, and it was out of my schedule. I mean, I had my hectic, busy plans for every moment. I mean, it is this hard for me that right now, if I want to plan something for tomorrow afternoon, I have to change. Yes. I have to just talk to many people to change this and that so I can manage. So see how this situation of 1 week trip could have hurt me.
Yes.
I got so sad. I kept nagging and complaining, but we had to go. Mm-hmm. And there was no other ways. So we went there, and first I was all grumpy and sad, and they don't talk to me.
Annoyed.
Yeah, just leave me. I'm going to just bear this and wait for it to end. But then when we were coming back after the week, and I wasn't like that there. I mean, once I saw them, my mood changed and I got better. But when we were coming back, I was thinking of this, that if suddenly everything finishes,
mm-hmm.
I mean, to look at the darker side, what if death happens?
Mm-hmm.
Happier side, what if this kind of trip happens? How will you react, and how can it teach you the lesson? I mean, there I learned that if everything stops at 1 second, you're not going to go to work tomorrow, you're not going to see your favorite friend tomorrow,
yes.
and you have to go somewhere else, be it the other world or be it another city. So this taught me that you have to be prepared for
yes.
everything.
And you have to be ready to give up on some stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Even for short term, which for you was a short
yeah.
term. And this can be an amazing lesson if we consider the concept of death, that all these lovely things that we have built is nothing to carry with us.
Yeah,
we
exactly.
should leave it here.
So true. And this is the moment that we have to change our idea. We have to be ready for it.
Yes.
I mean, we say normally that, okay, I'm ready for death. I'm a Muslim, so I know that this is not going to be
mm-hmm.
the end. I should be well prepared. But when it happens to us, like that moment that it came to me, that travel that came to me, we will be all sad. Like, I'm not ready. I have my plans. I have my routine.
Yeah, so we plan like there's not going to be any kind of interruption.
Yeah, breaking the routine can also be the other thing that will teach us many lessons regarding traveling. Also, Imam Ali alayhi salam had mentioned travel, for it provides 5 benefits: relief, earning, knowledge, companionship, and honor.
How beautiful.
See, these are great things that
yes.
Reaching even each of them can be so hard. But he's packing them all under the benefits of traveling. So in this way, by traveling, we can earn relief. We can earn, by earning, I think he means both the spiritual and the real ones.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, many people travel for business,
yes.
so it can help them. With knowledge, companionship, and honor. Also companionship.
How beautiful.
Yeah, being on a train with some people, once we enter, we don't know them. And mm-hmm. when we are leaving, we look around and we say, oh my God, they're my close friends.
And sometimes they're not.
Yeah, sometimes
sometimes
they're
the
not, for
other
sure.
side.
And there we learn that we have to be wiser.
We learn that we have to be a lot wiser. We learn that there are very crazy people out there. We need to be very, very, yeah. very careful.
So traveling is not useless. It's full of benefits.
Indeed it is.
Full of different ideas, different things, different lessons that we can learn.
Yes.
And that's probably the reason why Islam has highlighted the role of traveling for a Muslim and in their own lifestyle. So we have to have some time. We have to spend some time traveling.
Yes.
Well, with the wishes of great travels ahead of you, let's end today's episode. Until the next time, wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that, inshallah, in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum. Alhamdulillahi
Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Russia and Iran have a long and complicated history. In recent times, it's become more of an uneasy friendship. But events around the world have pushed them even closer with the recent coming into effect of the Strategic Partnership Agreement. It covers a whole array of things from cultural exchange, investment, and of course, defense. As Russia battles the whole of NATO on its doorstep, and as Iran has recently emerged victorious in its war against Israel, increasingly the two sides see themselves standing side by side in their defense of the emerging multipolar world. Who better to speak about all this than the Iranian ambassador to Russia, Dr. Kazem Jalali.
Ambassador, thank you so much for joining me. Are you happy with the recent strategic partnership agreement with Russia? What is most important to you, and is there anything missing that you wanted?
In the name of God. Well, you know that we had an agreement with the Russian Federation since around the year 2001, which effectively lasted for 20 years, and it ended in 2021. But was extended for another 5 years until 2026. Fortunately, in recent years, both countries have worked to design a new agreement and update the existing one, which is set to be finalized in 2025. Naturally, this agreement will open a new chapter in our relations, meaning that our interactions can be more structured and follow a proper framework. Since we prepared the draft of the agreement here in Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran wrote it, and we made sure to propose what is necessary for the relations between the two countries. Our friends in Russia also invested a lot of time enriching and strengthening this agreement, and we believe that today we have a very good agreement as a foundational document that we can rely on, and we see a clear horizon for our relations. I think we have included everything necessary in this agreement for both countries, whether it concerns bilateral cooperation in economic, political, security, defense, environmental, or human rights issues. All of these are included. Regarding regional matters, in addition to clarifying the nature of our cooperation in the region completely, we also addressed issues in the international arena.
Were you satisfied with the level of help that Russia gave during Iran's war with Israel? There's been some criticism that Russia didn't help as much as they should have. Did Russia give you the help that you wanted in your war with Israel?
You see, our two countries have a strategic relationship. The agreement we have states that if either of our countries is attacked by a third party, neither of us can assist the third party. This is clearly outlined in the agreement. Here, cooperation and assistance can be divided into two areas. One is the military sector. I believe that in the military field, we have made significant advancements, especially after the eight-year imposed war with Iraq during Saddam's regime. As everyone witnessed in the recent 12-day war, the Islamic Republic of Iran was able to shine brightly. Our missiles performed exceptionally well, despite the enemy's attempts to exploit the element of surprise. This was because on the Friday when the enemy attacked us, we were scheduled to have indirect negotiations with the Americans in Muscat just 2 days later on Sunday. On the other hand, another strategy was to assassinate our military commanders. However, our military forces, under the wise leadership of the commander-in-chief of the armed forces, were able to quickly regroup. Therefore, we utilized everything we had learned and what we were capable of in the military field, making the most of those resources. However, in the political and diplomatic arenas, I believe that Russia played a very positive role during that time. On the very first day of the operation and the Israeli regime's aggression against our country, Russian President Mr. Putin had a phone conversation with Iranian President Mr. Pezeshkian. And on the second day, Iranian Foreign Minister Mr. Araghchi spoke with his Russian counterpart, Mr. Lavrov. Throughout these 12 days, the Russian government issued three statements, which were very strong condemnations from the Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs against the Israeli regime and its aggression, as well as a defense of the positions of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Additionally, during a meeting held at the United Nations Security Council, Russia, along with China and several other countries, played a very constructive and supportive role for the Islamic Republic of Iran.
And are you unhappy that the S-400 air defense and the Sukhoi SU-35 jets have not been delivered? Was there an agreement on that, and why have they not been delivered? Are you unhappy about that?
Look, I've mentioned this in other media as well. Regarding the S-400, before the 12-day imposed war, meaning before Israel's aggression against Iran, we had not requested the S-400 from the Russian Federation. However, concerning the other military collaborations and contracts we have, they are all progressing according to their timelines and mutual understanding. Naturally, some of the collaborations we engage in take time and should be executed at the appropriate moment. Of course, the enemies of the Islamic Republic of Iran are making significant efforts to create various challenges and numerous ambiguities about the defense and military relations between the two countries, trying to uncover our secrets. It is natural for us to maintain confidentiality in our military collaborations, and we are working together in a discreet manner. However, what I can say as the ambassador of the Islamic Republic of Iran is that we are proceeding according to a scheduled plan for our military and defense collaborations.
It's notable that the agreement lacks a mutual defense clause. Did Iran want a stronger defense alliance? And has Russia ever offered a stronger defense alliance?
Look, as you mentioned, the agreement between the Islamic Republic of Iran and the Russian Federation includes defense and military cooperation. It states that in the event of an attack against each of the two countries, no one is allowed to provide assistance to the third party, the aggressor. The type of treaty that the Islamic Republic of Iran has with the Russian Federation is different from the one that the Russian Federation has with Belarus or the one we have with North Korea. Therefore, this aspect was not included. However, regarding whether there were any proposals from Russia, well, I need to say that sometimes our Russian friends are interested in expanding the members of the Collective Security Treaty. Additionally, at one point, Mr. Lavrov had discussions with ambassadors about creating new military agreements among aligned countries as a counter to NATO. But these discussions are still in the early stages and have not reached a conclusion. Clearly, these proposals were not solely with the Islamic Republic of Iran, but also with countries that Russia felt were aligned with them, aiming to collaborate on security issues and move forward with determination. These were the topics under discussion. However, as the Islamic Republic of Iran, you know that since the 1979 revolution, our entire effort has been to stand on our own feet. We have built our security system and security doctrine based on our national capabilities, and we strive to advance our initiatives according to our national strength. This, of course, does not negate cooperation with like-minded countries. We are working together with these countries, and it could open the door for future collaborations, leading to much more significant and robust partnerships.
And has the West's behavior, sanctions, war on both your countries, pushed Iran and Russia closer together?
Yes, of course. The behavior of the West has indeed brought us closer together, and there is no doubt about that. However, the important point to consider is that the Islamic Republic of Iran and the Russian Federation are two significant countries in the region, and at the same time, influential neighboring countries. Regardless of others' perspectives, we must maintain our relationship in a stable manner. Our outlook on our relations is quite clear. Therefore, the first point is that we are two neighboring countries, and we definitely need to advance and regulate our relations positively. But regarding the point you mentioned, yes, as a secondary factor, I must say that the behavior of the West has indeed brought Russia and Iran closer together. Russia is a country that was more inclined to be close to the West and work with it. And after the collapse of the Soviet Union, Russia made efforts to rebuild its relations with the West. Even during the collapse and the era of Mr. Gorbachev, Russia moved towards rebuilding its relations with the West. After that, during Mr. Yeltsin's time, we also see that he moved towards the West to restore relations. In more recent times, we observe that President Putin has also pursued the goal of restoring Russia's connections with Western countries. In various statements and interviews, he has mentioned that they wanted to join NATO and the European Union, but the Western nations did not accept Russia. As a result, the West's treatment of Russia has been inappropriate, as it essentially failed to accept Russia within itself. This is why the Russians perceive that the West is attempting to fragment their country. Additionally, since the victory of our revolution in 1979, the Islamic Republic of Iran has faced challenges with the West due to the mistreatment we experienced prior to the Islamic Revolution. Instead of correcting its behavior towards the Islamic Republic of Iran and the Iranian people after the revolution, the West continued its disrespectful behavior and mistreatment towards Iran. This includes the war instigated by Saddam against our nation, as well as the sanctions, threats, and numerous actions taken by the West against the Islamic Republic of Iran. For instance, as you may know, our passenger plane was shot down by the USS Vincennes in the sky, resulting in the deaths of around 300 of our citizens, among many other atrocities that could fill a lengthy list. So we and Russia share a commonality in being affected by the West. We have been harmed in one way, and the Russians have suffered in another. You can see in Russia that the West imposed sanctions, and similar events that occurred in Iran also happened in Russia. Naturally, this has strengthened our convergence and brought our perspectives closer in the realm of global management. We have both become opponents of so-called unilateralism and advocates for multilateralism, and many other events have occurred that have fostered this closeness. However, in conclusion, I want to emphasize that our relationship is not managed by the West. We must manage our own relations. The fundamental principle is that we are neighboring countries, and any relationship that either of us has had or will have with the West should not undermine the essence of the relationship between these two significant and influential neighboring countries.
And do you think Russia can help you negotiate a nuclear deal and the alleviation of sanctions? Can Russia help with that?
The Islamic Republic of Iran has a clear and transparent stance on various issues. Our framework has been defined by our leader, our president, our foreign minister, and senior officials like the esteemed Secretary of the National Security Council. Firstly, we have never left the negotiation table. If you pay attention, especially over the past 22 or 23 years regarding Iran's nuclear issue, we have consistently welcomed dialogue. In fact, because we do not wish to pursue the non-peaceful use of nuclear energy, we have made every effort to fully comply with the regulations of the International Atomic Energy Agency. Therefore, our cooperation frameworks are clearly defined, and it is evident that we are not seeking nuclear weapons. Throughout this process, we have always welcomed our friendly countries to play a constructive role. The Islamic Republic of Iran has never rejected helpful suggestions from its friendly nations. However, based on the specific frameworks we have, which have been announced in advance, we are not pursuing excessive demands. We are not seeking nuclear weapons, and we are not looking to violate international rules. Today, it is entirely clear who has disregarded international regulations. Today, we observe that the Zionist regime possesses several hundred nuclear warheads within the region and is not a member of the NPT, completely disregarding all international regulations. Not only international rules, but even basic humanitarian principles have been trampled by this regime. Torturing people, starving them, killing civilians, and committing genocide are all crimes that are no longer hidden from anyone, as the Zionist regime has carried them out. Alongside this, the Americans have also shown their support for the Zionist regime, completely ignoring international regulations and rights. As one of the world's great leaders once said, for them, international rules are a disgraceful matter. They simply cannot tolerate them. Iran has always been open to negotiations and continues to be so. However, as our leader and other officials have stated, we do not accept negotiations that lead to imposition or surrender. We cannot agree to negotiations where the outcomes are predetermined, and we are simply asked to sign what has already been dictated to us. Naturally, we will not accept such terms. If all these conditions are met and friendly countries are willing to assist, the Islamic Republic of Iran will never deny the support of its friendly nations.
Do you see the war in Ukraine and the war against Israel as part of the same conflict, as the United States trying to retain dominance over the world? And do you see how important is it, do you feel, that Russia, China, Iran stick together and help each other? Is that important to you or not?
The roots of today's crisis are fundamentally the same, and they are quite clear. In the region of West Asia or the Middle East, we observe that the Zionist regime is excessively greedy and is not seeking peace and security. On the other hand, this regime, which was established illegally 80 years ago, has consistently tried to create unrest within the region and pursue its own interests. And today, its greed is evident to the entire world. When we look at the situation in Ukraine, we see a similar pattern. No one is pleased with the war, and everyone genuinely believes that wars should end as soon as possible. However, we must also consider the instigators of the war. Ultimately, the Ukrainian and Russian nations share a common root. They were once one nation, with Kyiv being the capital of Russia for many years, and Ukraine has historically been alongside Russia. What so-called factors lead to these two nations, which originally coexisted and must continue to live side by side, since you cannot change neighbors, being drawn into war and strife? This question seems quite thought-provoking to me. Therefore, when we examine the roots of crises in various parts of the world, we see that they share common origins. And the greed of international powers has created such a situation for the oppressed nations of the world. Otherwise, the loss of life, whether it involves individuals from Russia or those from Ukraine, is painful and distressing for all nations and for every person who has a heart and sound judgment. The death of people never brings joy to others, and everyone should strive to put an end to these wars and unrest in the world. However, it appears that the underlying causes that lead to these wars are continuously being provoked by certain powers, resulting in conflicts on a global scale.
And Russia, you recently asked Iran if they could have to have better relations with Syria. Is it possible for Iran to have good relations with the new Syrian government?
We always consider the Syrian people as our friendly and brotherly nation, just as we view other nations around the world in the same light. The people of Lebanon, Yemen, Saudi Arabia, and the UAE, all these nations within our region are our neighbors, our friends, and especially our fellow believers. We are all Muslims. Naturally, we feel sorrow for the suffering of each of these nations, and we are concerned, and it is only natural that this concern extends to the Syrian people as well. The Islamic Republic of Iran has never severed its relations with any nation. It is natural that these decisions are made at the highest levels of our country, and thankfully, our officials will make precise decisions with wisdom at these high levels. It is also natural that since we have very close relations with Russia, we regularly consult and engage in dialogue with each other. Special representatives of the Russian government visit Iran, and our officials also travel to Russia for discussions, and we hope to achieve what is beneficial and in the interest of both nations and the regional countries in this regard.
Historically, been a lot of mistrust between Iran and Russia. How much mistrust is there now, and is it important for you to get more trust, and how can you do that?
Yes. As you somewhat indicated in your question, we have a historical background just like all other nations. Our history with Russia is quite extensive, and naturally, it includes both bitter and sweet memories. These memories are ingrained in the mindset of our people, and for us, they run a bit deeper due to the fact that we have endured some defeats as well. And I don't want to delve too much into that. Therefore, these bitter memories exist, yes. But what is important is that we must manage and build our present carefully by utilizing the lessons from the past. It is clear that we cannot live in the past. For instance, during World War II, around 27 to 8 million people were killed in Russia. The blame for World War II lies with Hitler and Germany. But Russia built its relations with the Germans afterward, to the extent that they were even collaborating on the Nord Stream 2 project, which, if successful, would have established a very strong connection between Germany and Russia. My point is that all nations and countries strive to learn from their past experiences, not to forget them, but to manage the current environment for their relationships. We are also doing the same thing with Russia. We believe that the new Iran and modern Russia are carefully shaping their relationship frameworks together. We recognize that this Russia is not the Tsarist Russia. It is entirely different today. And our approaches have become much closer, especially regarding regional and global issues. Therefore, our perspectives have aligned. Now, what should we do? There are many things we can consider. For instance, we should not be indifferent to the public opinions of both countries. Both nations need to work harder, especially in the realm of public diplomacy. Sometimes rumors and issues arise within Iran, We strive to manage and respond to these rumors. But I think it would be better for Russia to refine its public diplomacy and have a plan to engage the Iranian public opinion, the media, and the public in Iran. After all, if we want to manage our relations in a modern way, we need to adopt a persuasive approach. You see, today we all agree that there is a young generation out there. And this young generation is one that seeks exploration. They are not a generation that can be engaged without persuasion. This requires a solid plan in this regard. Currently, our governmental relations are in a very good state. Of course, there is another point here that is quite profound and merits a mention. It is that the two countries need to enhance their private and people-to-people relations. Before the Soviet Union, the people of Iran frequently traveled to Russia. The relationships were natural. However, after the formation of the Soviet Union, due to stricter regulations on foreign entry, these connections became more governmental than personal for nearly a century. We need to work towards connecting the private sectors of both countries and effectively expanding private enterprise. For instance, statistics show that over 5 million Iranians live in Europe. In the United States, statistics indicate that over 2 million Iranians reside there. However, in Russia, which spans 17,300,000 square kilometers and covers one-sixth of the Earth's surface, the total number of Iranians living there is just 11,000. Among these Iranians, the vast majority, perhaps only 400 or 500, are students who have arrived in recent years. These individuals are indeed valuable assets for the future of relations. They represent significant potential. Nevertheless, this number is quite small. On the other hand, the Russians are also quite few within Iran, which means there is a lack of mutual understanding, and we fall under the influence of negative Western propaganda. The West does not want the relationships between Iran, Russia, and China to become institutionalized. This is because it perceives these relationships as detrimental to its own interests, leading the West to devise plans aimed at our relations, creating rumors, spreading misinformation, and meticulously planning fake news. However, it seems that we, along with Russia and China, do not yet have the extensive media collaborations that the West has, which would allow us to establish a large media club among our countries, engage in dialogue, produce unified news, and create synergy. Therefore, this collaboration is lacking. The presence of the public is also limited, and there are numerous conspiracies that need to be contained. Nevertheless, we are making progress, moving forward, and we hope that, God willing, both we and our governments and peoples will have better plans for expanding our relationships.
To heaven and show us all The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا أو you who believe استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, Salamun Alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Osama Abdul Ghani.
We will try to make some effort to get a little, to know a little bit more about the station of our mother, Sayyida Zahra. The station of our mother with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is not something that you and I, we can grasp fully. I'm going to mention some of the ahadith. We'll talk about it. But again, this is much, much less than the reality. It's just that we're looking in that direction. We're hoping that Allah can show us a little bit about the station of our mother. I'm going to be taking some ahadith that have been mentioned by Shia and Sunni. There's some of them that have been mentioned, direct quotes from our Sunni brothers. Some of them are from Shia sources. Together trying to paint this picture to see a little bit about who she is and the preparation that took place for a night like this or a day like this. Right. We're celebrating her birth, but tonight we'll be talking a little bit about what went into her birth and her coming into this world. So first, we'll start off by talking a little bit about our prophet. Brothers and sisters, if we want to understand the station of Sayyida Fatima, let's remember that her father is undeniably and unquestionably the best of Allah's creation. Not just the greatest of the messengers of Allah, but the best of Allah's creation to ever set foot on the earth. If you look in some of our hadith, they say, أَوَّلُ مَا خَلَقَ اللَّهُ. The first thing that God ever made, Nuri, was the Nur of Muhammad. Amirul Mu'mineen, again for us to understand what went into her birth. Amirul Mu'mineen, who we know is the first of the Muslims, who slept in the bed of the Prophet, who, in order for the Prophet to be able to immigrate properly, he slept in the bed of the Prophet. He was there in the Battle of Khaybar, taking on Marhab, the Battle of Khandaq, taking on Amr bin Abdiwood, ripped the door off of Khaybar. What does Amirul Mu'mineen say about Rasulullah? He says, "Inna ma ana abdun min abidi Muhammad." That I, Ali, am nothing but a slave of Muhammad. So that's her father. When it comes to her mother, again, we're talking about one of the four best women to ever walk the earth, her mother. Just one hadith, because tonight we want to talk about Sayyida Fatima, but just again so we know the station of her mother. The Prophet told her mother this. So this is about Sayyida Khadija, the mother of Fatima. Inna Allah Azza wa Jal, truly Allah, the invincible, the majestic, la yubahi biki kirama malaikatihi kulla yawm mirara. Every day, on a daily basis, God boasts to the noble angels about you. Right? About Sayyida Khadija. Every day, God boasts to the angels that I have a wonderful servant named Khadija. That's her mother. But just that father, and again, that kind of a mother, even that's not going to be enough. There's preparation that takes place. You've heard that one of her names is that she is a human being, but at the same time, one of the Hurul'ain, right? The Prophet explains why. He says, when I went on the Mi'raj, one of the things that I did was that I partook of some of the heavenly fruit. He took of some of the fruit. That fruit that the Prophet got on the Mi'raj is what's going to be later what forms Sayyida Fatima. Even that, again, is not enough. So that kind of father, that kind of mother, Mi'raj, again, that's not enough. What happened? Angel Jibrail descended in all of his magnificence. What that means, he came in his original form. What the hadith tell us, and again, we don't know what that means, but the hadith say that that meant that his wings expanded over the east and the west. And he came to see the prophet with a message from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So prophet at that station, Sayyidah Khadijah at that station. Even then, what he told him, he said, this is from God now. 40 days, you have to separate yourself from Khadijah. You're going to be given this ultimate gift of Sayyidah Fatima. 40 days of the prophet at that station, go worship. At the end of the 40 days of worship, we learn from some of the hadith that again the prophet was given two fruits. This time one for him and also one for Sayyidah Khadijah. The angel came back to him on the 40th day, took that fruit. Then, that is the formation of Sayyidah Fatima. During her, when she was in the womb of her mother, she's speaking to her mother. And of course, we've already heard, and I've shared with you, that when she was finally delivered into this world, so a day like today, then those women came down from heaven to assist in her delivery. So that's a little bit, again, we don't know what she's really like, but a little bit of who the station is. Now our prophet, he didn't just suffice with those ahadith about her station, her being Nur, these kind of things. Actually, what he tried to do was to show his ummah practically what her station was with God. Our prophet, the greatest of creation. So this one that I want to mention to you is mentioned in the books of our Sunni brothers, this first hadith. They say that this was the seerah of the prophet. So this means that every time the prophet would see Sayyidah Fatima, this would take place. Remember at this time, because this is one of the wives of the prophet who's speaking. So Sayyidah Fatima, let's say she's 14 years old when this happens. That's what she says. She says, "Kanat idha dakhalat alay." So whenever Sayyidah Fatima would come into the house to see the prophet, rahaba biha. The first thing the prophet would do would be to welcome her. You've heard from the other hadith that the prophet would get from where he was sitting. He would stand up and he would walk to Sayyidah Fatima, right? He would then welcome her, rahaba biha. Now, waqabbala yadayha. The prophet would bend down and kiss the hand of his daughter, Rasulullah. Kissed the hands of his daughter. Wa ajlasaha fi majlisih. The other thing the prophet would do, and the wives of the prophet are watching this, the other thing is that the prophet, remember the prophet's house is as simple as you can imagine. There's like a sheepskin rug, but otherwise there's a dirt floor. The prophet would get up. He would sit in the dirt, and he would have Sayyidah Fatima sit in his seat. What would happen when the prophet would go visit her? When the prophet would go visit her, this is another hadith that says, وَإِذَا جَاءَ إِلَيْهَا. So now the prophet's going to visit Sayyidah Fatima. لَقِيَتْهُ. She would obviously go meet the prophet. وَقَبَّلَ كُلُّ وَاحَدٍ مِّنْهُمَا صَاحِبَهُ. Each one would then kiss the other. The father is kissing the daughter. The daughter is kissing the father. وَجَلَسَ مَعَانَ. Now was different.